Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Kia ora and hello. I've been asked to tell you about No Labels, the radio show for, by, and about people living with disabilities. The show offers interviews and news about the disability sector in Aotearoa, New Zealand. On Wellington's Access Radio 106.1 FM. Find us on Facebook or go to www.accessradio.org.nz. No Labels, our voice for you on Access Radio.
Hello and welcome to this No Labels Youth Week special. I'm Mike Gawley. Yes, it's Youth Week, so on today's show we meet up with a youth-centric mental health service. But before that, we're joined by disabled Wellington writer Trish Harris, talking about her forthcoming book, Out of the Box, targeting a younger audience. Trish Harris is a published author with a memoir and a book of poetry already under her belt. So how does Trish Harris approach a very different avenue of writing?
Good question. I did a lot of research. I knew that there was a lot of stuff I didn't know. I guess when you're writing a memoir, you think, well, I know that story. But this was about other people's stories and about our deaf and disability history. And I knew there was a whole lot I didn't know in those areas. So I read some books about deaf history and blind education history. And I tapped into National Library resources. So I would go into the National Library and I watched a documentary about disability history in New Zealand. It was an Inside Out documentary, which you would know well. You might have even worked on. And so I watched that. They're stored by Ngā Taonga Sound and Vision at National Library. I went on to Papers Past, so they digitise lots of the newspapers from somewhere in the 1800s, not to the present day, but I think it's a project they're working on. So there's a whole lot of things I needed to research and find out. That was probably the starting point.
Can you just describe this project? What were you trying to achieve and who were you trying to achieve it for?
So I was wanting to capture some of the significant deaf and disabled people in Aotearoa, New Zealand, past and present, profile them. The book's only got 25 in it, so it's not comprehensive. It could have been a book of 100 or more easily. But I'm really pleased with who I have got. And so I was trying to capture, I guess, that diversity upon diversity, which I think is the deaf and disability world. And I was wanting to also capture our details of our history. So the book has 25 profiles and it has a detailed timeline from 1840. And it's for young people, and I think the best books for young people are also for older people. I thought, we don't know our own history and other people don't know our history. It's been hidden in lots of ways, and I think I wanted it not to be hidden, and I wanted young people to learn about it because it's blimmin' interesting, you know, like it's not a tedious thing. It's actually a really exciting but also sobering. It's a whole mixture of things.
So when you talk about diversity upon diversity, I'm thinking diversity of people and a diversity of what areas of life they were in.
Yeah.
To get a great, good, broad, you know, very varied kind of idea about how many areas of life we've been involved in over the years.
That's correct. But also a diversity of impairments, you know, so that a range of young people and adults can see themselves there. Because sometimes that matters, you know, that, oh, so another person who was blind did this, or someone else who lives with mental distress did that. You know, sometimes that connection can really matter. It doesn't always for people. You know, I think sometimes, you know, I've been involved in lots of pan-disabled things, and there's so much that we have in common regardless of our impairments. what they are, what kind of impairment we've got, that I'm not dissing that, but I did also, you know, I have a physical impairment. Well, I didn't want a book full of people with physical impairments. I wanted to keep spreading that net to really try and represent the diversity.
So are you able to just give us a few examples of maybe some of the profiles that you've been dealing with?
Sure. Paul Curry, he's someone I did know, and I hastened to add, there's a lot in the book of people I didn't know. It wasn't just a book of people I'd known, but he and a group of his mates hand-pedalled, sitting in their wheelchairs across Cook Strait in the early 1980s. It was just an amazing adventure and kind of out there activity to do. And I always knew that if I had the opportunity, I'd want him in the book, because I mean, I've got people in there, and Paul was included in that, who've done political things, and I always knew I wanted that strand there strongly. But I also wanted the fun, adventurous, you know, bizarre things as well. So I just think that's a story that will wow young people who read it, and definitely wowed people at the time. So he's one. And his story focuses mainly on that trip. You know, could have been on other things, but it focuses mainly on that trip activity. Who else? I've got Sophie Pascoe in there. So, you know, she's a name, isn't she? And she's well known. But I've also, so she's spoken about as the person who's, you know, the most medalled Paralympian, which she is. But she wasn't always. And she took over from someone else. And I've got that someone else in the book, and it's Eve Rimmer. And Eve was the first Paralympian, New Zealand Paralympian, to get a medal. And her story is fascinating in its own right. So it's a great piece in her story about, she didn't really know other people who used wheelchairs. In fact, she didn't use wheelchairs. She walked with calipers for a long, long time. But she went to the sporting event, and all of these people in wheelchairs, and she was kind of amazed, because they were vibrant and interesting, and she'd never come across people in wheelchair like that before. It just didn't fit in with that image she'd had in her head. So I think in all the profiles, there's little pieces in them that I'm particularly think, oh yeah, that's part of the story that we need to tell.
And when you say, wow, young people, you're not doing this sort of inspirational idea that you want people to inspire others. Is it more about just the full context of their life and what people achieved and how that might excite young people?
Yeah, I know. I think it's always tricky with the inspiration thing, isn't it? And I definitely don't want it to be a book which is about, oh, look at those great disabled people, you know, they have a terrible life, but look at what they achieve. It's not written in that way. It's written with the detail, the interesting detail, which is both everyday and at times extraordinary. It's both. And I guess it's partly about representation. You know, if you're a young person who's deaf or disabled, where do you see other people like you doing things? Often it is only in those cringeworthy TV pieces about inspirational people. So I think this is another place where you won't get that kind of view, but you'll get their story and its reality, which is, as we know, mixed. It's not one thing or the other. And I hope for those that aren't deaf or disabled that it opens their eyes about where we belong and where we operate and what we do and how we do it. I mean, I think there's a danger, isn't there, if you say, well, we don't want stories that are inspirational. Well, then you don't have any. So, you know, we have to find ways to tell the stories on our own terms, and I hope the book does that.
And do you hope this will be a discussion resource that people can think about all those questions when they read it?
Absolutely. And I also hope that they'll look at the history and the timeline So and actually be appalled about some of the things that have happened in that timeline, because how do we make sure they don't happen again? We've got to know about them, you know. So I hope it will educate about things like that. And I also hope it will make people realise how vibrant the deaf and disability community is in Aotearoa. You know, like one of the things on the timeline is the award that hardworking disabled activists fought for with the UN Convention on the Rights of Disabled People, and the award that was given to New Zealand as a result. Well, that's something all of New Zealand should be proud of, isn't it?
I think it's up there with getting the vote and
all
that sort of thing. Yeah. Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah.
So the timeline, as you said, starts with 1840 and finishes probably quite recently, I'd imagine.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the process of writing a book is quite long, and so I handed in, you know, one, what I thought was the final draft in the end of 2024. And, of course, the book's come back with editing, and I had a few more profiles to write, and so it's only just gone to print in 2026, and so the timeline ended in 2024, but so much has happened since then, and so it's been updated, and so the timeline finishes in March 2026. So up to date as we could make it.
So looking at that timeline, what would you say have been the major shifts in progress between 1840 and, say, 2024?
I would think... our voice is leading things, I think. The fact that our voice is heard now. Does that mean everything's perfect? Does that mean everything is taken notice of? No, it doesn't mean those things. But it's heard and it's accepted and expected to be there. And so that means organisations run by us. It means access to ministers by us. I think that's it. And language, of course, has changed because it continually evolves anyway. And that's one of, I think, in the book has got, it's sort of got stories within stories within stories, and the language one is one that's there in the timeline, definitely, and explicitly in places. I think one of the things that I had a growing appreciation of was how disability and impairment is seen in Te Ao Māori, which I didn't really know much about. And, you know, there'll be stories, of course, pre-1840, but, you know, I worked with two guides in terms of Māori content in the book, and we really looked at whether it was appropriate to have Purako in there, you know, stories of Tipuna who had impairments, and it just ended up that it wasn't. But I do think one of the stories post 1840 is a growing awareness of the importance and the need and the potential for everyone if the the view of impairment from Te Ao Māori is incorporated in many places in terms of disability support services. So I think that's another story that's kind of in there.
That's Trish Harris, a disabled Wellington writer, talking about her upcoming book, Out of the Box.
So my name's Harrison, and I work as the alcohol and drugs practitioner within the counselling team.
I'm here at Evolve Wellington, an unashamedly youth-centric mental health agency. Earlier, I interviewed manager Stuart Clark at our Access studio.
So I am the manager at Evolve Wellington Youth Service. So my name is Stuart Clark. I've been here for 5 years this weekend.
Really?
Someone sounds a bit surprised.
Yeah, it feels like longer.
So, Stuart, could you tell me about Evolve Wellington? What is it? What does it do?
Yeah, cool. So Evolve is a youth one-stop shop. So we support young people in Wellington City. We've been running for just over 22, 23 years. It was established by young people for young people, with an enthusiastic group all those years ago helping get things underway. So we provide wraparound support services for young people of Wellington, including social support, youth development programs, GP and nursing consultations and mental health support and counselling and things like that. So, and so we work in a multidisciplinary environment where we can actually support people where they're at and when they're at.
Why did you focus on what seems to be such a young age group, like 10 to 24? That would seem to be a rather young slice of the population. What motivated that?
Definitely younger than me, but yeah, it's a critical life time for people with neurodevelopment and just what is going on for them. So the goal is to help people in that age range really develop and understand themselves and particularly as they go through development and major life choices and get life started carry on life, but actually move towards greater independence. And so it's that support in that area as well.
So what kind of things were happening to require people to be supported in that age group? What was going on? What kind of things?
So we have all, there's all kinds of things going on. So I think when we initially started, there was a lot more of that, even just those independent sexual health and GP type health checks, but also a bit of, people with family breakdowns, for people with, issues like that going on. These days, we do have a lot of young people who are estranged from their family. Not all of them. It's not a requirement, but I think in terms of being able to support them where they don't necessarily have the natural supports that some of us have been more privileged to have. We see a lot of young people with neurodiversity and trying to support them in managing the neurodiverse needs that they have and understanding themselves in that, as well as a lot of support for the rainbow community and our trans youth as well, who are also finding that mainstream type providers aren't meeting those needs in the same way.
So can you expand a bit more on the programs that you talked about, like GP and counselling and wraparound support? What kind of things are happening at Evolve?
It is absolutely variable because we're there for where people are at. So if we start with our groups and programs, which a lot of people, that might be the only contact they have with Evolve, so they might come along and do learner license workshops, which are as much about developing community and connection as they are about actually getting a driver's license at the end of it. But we also obviously support people to get that little skill along the way. We have wellbeing programs out using the Council Kilburnie gym. So people are getting physical health exercise and life skills around that space. And again, that's a big thing about community. We have a youth advisory group whose job is to keep me on my toes. So we've got them. And other programs like a young parents group, just so that people can connect and have support around the fact that they're now growing their own young human beings as well. And then we have GP services, so we do fully enrol our young people. So they can have full GP support and nursing support. We try and do nurse-led where we can, but some people do need to have that GP support as well. Very tight criteria as to what we can manage because we couldn't enrol every young person in the city for the kind of thing we do without the additional funding. We are funded to be a free service, so it is free and accessible for all. The mental health. So we have various streams of mental health supports, including alcohol and other drug practitioner. We have strengths coaching. We have counsellors who are able to provide brief intervention therapy for people as they're struggling in different areas as well, just help them understand and grow in themselves. Yeah, and then we've got the social support team. So it's youth workers and social workers who are working to sometimes just navigate very complex systems, whether that be the WINS system or whether that's the housing and tenancy rights, support to write a CV. We do see a lot of people in unhoused type situations where they may be couch surfing or even living on the streets. So we try and provide the support and connections to housing providers that they need. And sometimes that's as simple as just getting them along to get appropriate ID and getting their rights sorted for them so that they can make that next step in that journey.
So how are you funded? Who funds you?
Our main funder is Te Whatu Ora, Health New Zealand. So they fund us as a youth one-stop shop, so specifically as a wraparound service, not just as a GP. We do get a little bit of the primary health GP funding, but that's not a big source of that. We have funding that is currently administered by Oranga Tamariki, that's specifically to provide a social support service within the youth one-stop shop. We rely a lot on charitable donations and foundations, stuff like that. So Lotteries New Zealand have been a regular supporter. Wellington City Council as well have regularly supported a lot of our youth development working groups and programs. So we have various funding, but we're always keen to find more.
So what kind of experience do people need to have in order to get involved and evolve as paid people? What kind of things are you looking for there?
For the paid work, so we employ GPs, nurses, we have youth workers. We do like to have our youth workers come through already qualified in youth work rather than straight off the street, although we can do some professional development with people as they to build on their skills. We have social workers. Our youth programs coordinators also have youth development type qualifications generally, or some will have a bit more of a PT type background or sports and recreation background. Because we're a variable team, it all comes down to what the vacancy is at the time as to what we're after.
So what motivated you to become involved, Stuart?
What motivated me? I had a long background working in healthcare and in healthcare management. But in the last few careers, shall we say, I've moved further and further into the social sphere and away from just pure health. So I worked in aged care initially. After my initial training was actually medical laboratory science, which I've always described as the health science for socially inadequate people. So I did that to keep myself away from people a little bit, but realised I needed to be closer to that coalface, and so moved into aged care management, and then into our disability support services management, and now into this youth development role. And what I found in those roles was that beautiful intersection between the social story of people and the upholding the mana and the dignity of individuals, while still holding some of that health background, but certainly not taking the priority in that. It is far more about the human being and the essence of who we are.
Thanks, Stuart. Now, you've got someone with you there. Maybe I can have them get involved at this point.
Yes, okay, over to Abby.
Hi.
Okay, can you please let me know who you are and what your role is?
So my name's Abby Farrell. I am one of our youth advisor group people. I'm also just part of Evolve in many ways.
So did you come up through Evolve yourself?
Yes, I do use Evolve myself.
And what were the circumstances that you were facing that maybe got you involved in Evolve, if you don't mind telling me?
I actually became involved with Evolve, that was a tongue twister, through my high school when they were doing nurse visits. And then I ended up joining YHP and just sprouted from there. And then when we did our youth, when our first youth advisory group came about, I jumped at the opportunity to apply, very luckily got in. And then when it came about again last year for this year's group, jumped at the opportunity because I had experience from our last youth advisory group. I was one of the main contenders to get in for this one.
And what's the role of the youth advisory group, Abby?
It's pretty much giving the patients their voice to Stuart and all the other staff members, as well as getting to do some fun events, which I can't say at the moment, or can I?
Yeah, there's some balance between having social activities and getting to know your peers, but also helping us have affirmed youth voice.
Yeah, this is why I need Stuart to tell me, because I'm not the best at remembering.
It's all good, Abby.
So, can you think of an example of where you might have had to provide advice that helped steer Evolve in a different direction or the same direction or affirm what it was doing?
Oh yes, I can clearly think of a time. We have currently just finished our strategy planning for the next couple years, and we were going back and forth for what, four meetings or longer, to put our foot down. We finally said, no, this is what we want, and Stuart and the board listened.
Yeah, that voice has been crucial in shaping our strategy, which is yet to be mic dropped, but it's very,
Oh, of
very
course.
close to. No, people know we're working on it, but the actual strategy, not quite mic dropped yet, but we're very keen to get that ready for celebration. Then huge voice and huge input from that team.
That was a headache, those meetings.
Is it too early to kind of give us a sense of what kind of scope the strategy might cover?
There was very much that a lot of it is going to be that continuation of what we're doing, but it's just refining that sense of the mana of young people and that sense that we're here. And mana was a big word that came through as well as, oh my goodness, sorry, my thing was binging in the background. So upholding the mana, we have a new vision statement which is not quite yet signed off, so I won't go quite into that, but it's nothing necessarily radical, but I think it's a beautiful refinement on what we've got, and it's a whakatauki that was written by one of our young people in the youth advisory group, and we're really excited by that vision
I
of.
think it's been we'll not say the name, but
Yeah.
yep, but
Can you tell us what that whakatauki is, please, Abby?
until it's signed off, I probably shouldn't talk about it.
Do not have access to that document at this current point. We, to that specific whakatauki was written by another young person. And we have to get it signed off by multiple people to be able to say what it is.
Okay,
So I.
What's the space?
That's Evolve Manager Stuart Clark wrapping up today's special youth-focused No Labels. And with him, you heard Youth Advisory Group member Abby. And we'll go out with Stuart's favourite track, The Last Dinner Party, sees it on the TV screen. Until next time, I'm Mike Gawley, inviting you to join me then. Ka kite anō.
When we say goodbye, I know that I can see myself as a man when I put on that suit. I don't have to stay mute. I can talk all the time, 'cause my shoulders are wide and I'm falling like the leaves.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.